Excelsior! Welcome to TwerpCast episode 62, SpiderCast. If you figured out we'll be discussing the Amazing Spider-Man, you win a TwerpCast official no prize, patent pending. This time, we will be discussing all things Peter Parker and friends. Enough said. I'd like to introduce you to the Amazing Spider fan and executive producer of TwerpCast, Jim Caswell.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, the Ben Reilly to my Peter Parker. Also joining us for today's show is Ken Halloran.
We'll call him the Miles Morales of the Spider-Man universe.
I wasn't aware there was a new Spider-Man.
Yes, they killed off Peter Parker.
In the Ultimate Universe, not in the...
Of course.
That way they can have their cake and eat it too.
Could be worse, they could just remove the whole damn thing.
Exactly.
Well, if you get out to your comic book shop right now, you will actually find on the stands a Spider-Man comic book that reprints Amazing Fantasy number 15, which was the very, very, very first Spider-Man comic, and like the next first two issues of Amazing Spider-Man, all done with modern computerized coloring. The same original pencils and inks, but new computerized coloring because that's so much cooler.
Take it, it looks like shit.
I wasn't impressed, but I noticed it in the store and actually flipped through it. But yeah, Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, 1962, created Spider-Man. Jack Kirby says he had a hand in it, but that's debatable. Actually, I did read something where Jack Kirby did a design for Spider-Man, and Stan looked at it and basically said, no, it's too heroic looking. Jack Kirby's guys are these big muscle guys, and Spider-Man wasn't a big muscle guy.
Spider-Man's a puny teenager, actually.
Yes.
In fact, he was one of the first teenage superheroes. Before that point, most of the teenage superheroes were actually sidekicks to the main superhero.
Or, as Bill Campbell would say, sidekick!
Actually, arguably the first teenage superhero who wasn't a sidekick was Captain Marvel, but...
But he was a kid who suddenly grew into an adult.
In any given Wiz comic or Captain Marvel adventures from the 40s, you'd get several pages of Billy Batson and one or two pages of Captain Marvel.
The character was also among the first to deal with the angst situations, the situations of just regular life. Troubles with girls, troubles with bullies, troubles with school, trying to balance real life and being a superhero.
Oh, and Aunt May's going into the hospital again. And people wonder why I don't read Spider-Man. I'll give you a hint, folks. If I want trouble with girls or trouble with bullies or worried about a family member going into the hospital again, I don't need it in my escapist literature. That's what I'm escaping from.
Now, Spider-Man has been one of the most prolific characters used in the Marvel Universe. Been featured in over a dozen titles just with his solo adventures. Some of these titles have included The Amazing Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, Peter Parker the Spectacular Spider-Man, Spider-Man, Sensational Spider-Man, Spider-Man Unlimited, Spider-Man Family, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, and most recently, Avenging Spider-Man.
You know, what was really interesting is, even though we're saying that he's been in over like a dozen titles, pretty much for the majority of like my growing up, he was in six titles at the same time. But they all had like different creative staffs. So some of them were really good and some of them were really crappy.
Yeah, I think Spider-Man was one of the first titles that I remember coming out pretty much on a weekly basis. It was a different title each week, but there was a Spider-Man book coming out every single week.
Well, I guess what I liked about it, though, is if you were picking up The Amazing Spider-Man, you didn't also have to pick up Peter Parker the Spectacular Spider-Man. You could just pick up The Amazing Spider-Man and get the continuing story.
Yeah, those were the good old days. Now, that list didn't even include the hundreds of miniseries and spinoffs that have come out based on him and his friends.
I say nothing of his pretty regular guest appearances in other people's books.
Very true.
I mean, it was pretty much a standard thing. Third issue of a comic book came out featuring a new hero, and you could lay odds Spider-Man was going to be in it. Thank God, Pope John Paul I only had one issue.
Yeah, right now in Marvel Comics, he has his four ongoing titles, plus he's a regular member of the New Avengers, plus a regular member of the Fantastic Four.
I loved when he was in the Fantastic Four with Hulk, Wolverine, and Ghost Rider.
Yeah, this time he's actually with Mr. Fantastic, the Invisible Woman, and the Thing. He stepped in when Johnny Storm was killed for all of 6 months. Again, referring back to the good old days, when at least you could count on Bucky and Jason Todd being dead.
As far as I know, the only comic book characters that you can pretty much guarantee will stay dead are Thomas Swain and Ben Parker, and I'm not even going to count on those two anymore.
I don't think the Bug-Eyed Bandit ever made it out of the crisis.
I'd have to double check, and his universe has been rebooted anyway, so it's hard to say.
Please, don't give DC any more bad ideas. Now, while Peter Parker is the best-known Spider-Man, there have also been other Spider-Men in the Marvel Universe. When Marvel did Marvel 2099, they had their own Spider-Man, which is actually where Sam Raimi got the idea of the organic web shooters and the fine hairs that allowed Peter Parker to stick to the wall. And as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, there is an all-new Spider-Man in the Marvel Ultimates.
And then, of course, depending on where you are in continuity, there are people like Ben Reilly.
Very true. The Scarlet Spider. Fun with clones.
Bring in the clones.
They're already here. So you've got all of that going on in the comics. But Spider-Man hasn't just stayed in the comics. He's managed to expand out into all other forms of media.
Oh, like the Spider-Man radio show.
Yes, exactly. In 1996, the BBC Radio actually commissioned an audiobook to run in England.
Because things like web shooters and swinging from buildings are so easily turned into audiobooks.
No, they're not. Neither are gas guns. Take my word for it.
No, what's that smell?
He's been on television a lot. One of my weirdest memories about Spider-Man on TV was watching The Electric Company specifically so I could watch Spider-Man.
I thought that was great. What a great way to introduce The Electric Company to this young audience.
I was already watching Electric Company, but yeah, having Spider-Man on it was cool.
Spider-Man, where are you coming from, Spider-Man? Nobody knows who you are.
They ought to bring back Morgan Freeman and get him in one of the Spider-Man movies.
Another old favorite was the Spider-Man cartoon series, the original one.
67 or thereabouts.
Right.
Still my favorite version.
Very campy, but campy is good.
I didn't think it was that campy. It's not like Adam West campy.
No, it wasn't Adam West level campy, but some of those Rhino episodes were pretty campy.
I like them because they were, as our friend James Taylor puts it, it was the DC version of Spider-Man.
Okay.
Spider-Man without the angst?
Yes. It was actually a lot of happy endings. Yeah, you two are like 12, aren't you?
Gwen, can I get a happy ending with that?
What is it Neil was saying the other day? How soon are you going to be finishing junior high school?
I'll never grow up, never grow up, not me.
But no, commentary to the side, one of the things about Spider-Man is he is never allowed
to truly be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably one of the reasons why the whole, I'm going to make a deal with the devil to save my dying aunt and give up the love of my life storyline really, really bugged me.
I guess with Spider-Man more so than actually the rest of the Marvel Universe, I kind of forgave him the angst because he was such an interesting, rich character as a hero. I mean, he was the guy who poked fun at the villains, but that he usually had such an interesting rogues gallery. I love the Flash as a character, but some of his rogues gallery is just dumb.
He probably has the second best rogues gallery in comic books. In my opinion, right behind Batman.
Yeah, I would say he competes with Batman, honestly. Just commentary on Marvel Universe. Again, I was willing to forgive Spider-Man this, whereas I wasn't in other circumstances, like Scarlet Witch and the Vision. There was so much angst that went on there, it just drove me nuts.
And when John Byrne took over, he just cranked it up to 11.
Yes. That's one of the things that I like about John Byrne. It's one of the things I hate about John Byrne.
That was the Casper and Wendy phase of Vision and Scarlet Witch, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Getting back to the TV shows, probably my second favorite Spider-Man TV show was The Amazing Spider-Man from 78 to 79. It was also probably the shortest lived one, but, you know, I was 8 and 9 at that period in time. It was just fantastic for that age group.
I can honestly say as a 9-year-old, it was my favorite version of Spider-Man.
I still prefer the cartoon at that point in my life. But Nicholas Hammond did a credible job to bringing the character to life. And
especially considering the fact that they didn't have the technology that we have now. Some of the stuff that they were doing was kind of cutting edge for the time.
Oh, yeah. Although I was actually kind of bothered by the fact that his web shooter and utility belt were on the outside of his tights. It actually made an eminent amount of sense once I was old enough to stop and think about it. But at the time, it really kind of bothered me.
Because it wasn't that way in the comics.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that at the age of 9 and 10, 11, you were at the same mindset that a lot of the trolls are on the internet now.
Apparently.
I'm so glad you outgrew it.
Well, now I look at it and go, okay, how does he actually wear that web shooter under his wrist and not have it make a bulge in his tights? But that's only if I think about it too long.
And we prefer when you don't think about the bulge in Spider-Man's tights.
I was referring to the one on his wrist, Mr. Happy Ending.
Then there were a lot more animated shows. There was Spider-Man in 1981. There was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which I did really enjoy. Again, it was that age level. There were the tie-ins with X-Men and all the different storylines that they told. And it was actually one of the longest-running ones as well. Even though there weren't a lot of episodes, it was on the air over and over and over again.
Just rewatched an episode of that about a month ago. 7 Little Superheroes, the Chameleon versus, well, the Spider Friends and like 4 other heroes. And I remember really enjoying it as a kid, and I was really disappointed watching it as an adult. Something about the Chameleon having the technology to be able to screw up Doctor Strange and the Silver Surfer just hurt my head. And Captain America was a wuss.
Yeah, they kind of had trouble understanding Captain America in the 70s.
And 80s, and 90s, and 2000s.
Actually, it's one of those weird things that Disney XD on Sunday mornings has a Spider-Man Avengers block. And at the end of the Avengers block, they do the Marvel mashup, which is where they take the old Incredible Hulk cartoons, the old Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends cartoons, and they redub them to try to make fun of them. And it actually sometimes bothers me because it's like, wait a second, you're making fun of my childhood. Then we start creeping out of my childhood and into probably yours. There was a Spider-Man show from 94 to 98, followed by Spider-Man Unlimited, where they sent him into outer space or another parallel dimension or something. That one was weird. There was Spider-Man, the new animated series on MTV.
Was that the one with Neil Patrick Harris doing the voice?
Yes, yes it was.
Okay.
Then there was The Spectacular Spider-Man, and now running on Disney XD Ultimate Spider-Man.
Well, Spider-Man doesn't just run in cartoons. Spider-Man became a live-action hero in 2002.
It's fun.
He was a live-action hero in 78, 79. We already discussed, you know, Nicholas Hammond and his most famous role in the second biggest thing he ever did.
And the first thing was?
He was one of the Von Trapp kids in the film Sound of Music. I'm just saying Spider-Man had been live-action before.
I don't know where the Sam Raimi hatred has suddenly come from, but I've been hearing a lot of people bad-mouthing the original Spider trilogy. I don't get it. I remember when it first came out, people were all, wow, this is fantastic. It was just 2 years after Singer's X-Men came out, which was considered to be the first good Marvel movie that was ever made. And Sam Raimi was right there behind it with Spider-Man. It's what helped Marvel break into the movie business in the first place.
And this was like a huge deal. This movie was a movie like on the heels of Harry Potter. This was the first movie that broke Harry Potter's box office record. This was an amazingly big deal. People loved this movie.
And for some reason, now that something new has come along, they're trying to badmouth it. Okay, admittedly, Spider-Man 3 wasn't fantastic. I don't think that was Sam Raimi's fault.
Spider-Man 3 was a mashup of Sam Raimi's movie and Sony's movie. And you could tell there were two different movies. There was a Sandman story that was very good and very well done, and they threw Venom in for some reason because he was a popular character.
That's exactly what it was. They thought, oh, Venom will add money to this. no, people hated the Venom storyline because it was thrown in. But Sam Raimi's Spider-Man came out in 2002. Spider-Man 2 came out in 2004. Spider-Man 3 came out in 2007.
And then Sony said, we're going to do another one.
Yeah. Sony said, we need to keep the license. Let's make another one. And they went to Sam Raimi and said, yeah, we know that you only planned on doing a trilogy, but we want to do another one. He said, okay, sure, we'll do another one. Presented his ideas to Sony, and Sony said, no, we think we want to go in another direction. One that'll cost them less money. We're not even going to buy you dinner. Which is where the new film came in. Whether you want to call this a reboot, a relaunch, or a retelling, it's coming out just 5 years after its predecessor.
Or as the studio wants to say, on the 10th anniversary of the Spider-Man franchise.
Yeah. That means that the people who weren't alive to see the original trilogy are 10 years or younger.
It's Spider-Man. Superheroes are popular with kids. I just wish the comic book people realized that.
Yeah. Now, our friend Eric had major problems with me calling this a reboot. His attitude is, well, look at all the multiverses of Marvel that have Spider-Man in it. This is just another universe telling of Spider-Man. Which, to some degree, he has a point. But when the studio itself is calling it a reboot, I feel justified in calling it a reboot.
Studio really wants us to be considered a reboot. This is a relaunch, rebooting the series.
When you have another telling of the origin story, it's a reboot. And like I said, Sony had to get another movie out there. Otherwise, within a certain amount of time, the license to the character would revert back to Marvel and Disney, and they'd lose the right to make money off of it.
They're so confident in their money-making ability that Sony's already writing the second and third movies.
It's called, they want to make sure that for the next 5 to 10 years, they still maintain the license. But I'm not cynical or anything.
You know, if Disney/Marvel really wanted the license back, they could pay Sony enough money to get it back, but...
Very true. They just don't want it back that badly. But, as Eric said, we should judge this movie based on its own merits and not compare it to its predecessors.
Well, there's a validity to that thought, actually.
Yes, there is.
Do we judge the first Christian Bale Batman film based on what Michael Keaton did? Or what Adam West did?
I think we compared it, but we didn't judge it. And I think it's perfectly fair to compare, not judge here.
Okay.
In concern of, like, judging stuff based on the past, one of the things that happens is we look at something like an Alfred Hitchcock movie. And then decades later, Vince Vaughn thinks that he can do it just as well, but without another psycho movie. Shot for shot, the same movie. And people are shocked when one of them sucks and one of them's a classic. Well, what happens when you have, like, a franchise like Spider-Man, where you've got literally two movies that are only 10 years apart, and there's two movies in between them? Do you end up saying, well, one's a classic and the other sucks? Or do you say, well, the first is a classic and the second is its own classic?
I think it's way too soon in the process to consider either one of them a classic. We'd need to go back and take a look at them 10, 15 years down the line to see how they hold up based on their own merits.
I agree with you. I'm the type of person that says you gotta look at the J.J. Abrams Star Trek as its own entity, not compare it to the other Kirk and Spock.
So, first and foremost, let's talk about the storyline. They're both origin stories. There have been origin stories before this, both in the comics and on the various TV shows. How does it fare as an origin story?
Overall, I think it held up pretty well. They obviously made a few changes. Different changes than Raimi had made, but within the context of the film, it worked.
Again, just for comparison's sake, I find it funny that people badmouthed Raimi's organic web shooters because they weren't that way in the comic. And they've been praising this movie because, oh, they finally got the web shooters right. But there were some fairly dramatic changes to the origin story in this one. I didn't mind the changes. I thought they did a good job of bringing the origin into the 21st century, but there were some significant changes.
It was really the web shooters that got me, because there's been such a huge internet presence of this, that people are glad they got rid of the organic web shooters and that they're showing Peter Parker's scientific knowledge that he's the one who created the web shooters. And then you get into the movie and you find out he only creates the directional device, for the lack of a better term. It's an Oscorp creation.
Yeah, he doesn't create the web himself. The webs he gets from Oscorp, he just develops the shooter.
Yes. So I'm like, all right.
I thought it was convenient that the Oscorp thing already had them in the proper size packets, though.
Yes. They didn't come in 12-gallon jugs. They came in these little 2-inch containers.
But I digress. So how is the storyline based on its own merit? Just like the Sam Raimi film, and its own take on the origin. The comic book origin, the Raimi origin, and the web origin are parallel. They're not the same, but they travel a parallel line.
Right. Peter Parker is kind of a geeky science dude who is getting beat up a lot. He gets bit by a spider in a lab. He develops the Spider-Man powers. He starts standing up for himself. Uncle Ben comes in after he starts standing up for himself. The change in the Uncle Ben aspect of the story, specifically the death of Uncle Ben, that was actually one of the bigger changes. And in some ways, I actually liked the changes that they made in this movie. In the comic books and in Sam Raimi's film, Peter Parker basically gets gypped out of a lot of money. And when the guy gets robbed, you kind of sit there and go, yeah, okay, I can see why Peter would be ticked off. And okay, it was a couple $100. Was it worth Uncle Ben's life? No. But you kind of understand in that moment where he might be coming from. In Webb's movie, essentially, Uncle Ben dies over 2 cents. And in a lot of ways, that actually made it more dramatic for me, because it was such a senseless crime that Peter wouldn't have had to have been Spider-Man to stop it. He could have just been a normal human being, but because he was ticked off over 2 cents, it cost Uncle Ben his life. And to me, that actually added some power to it.
I guess my overall thought is not as specific as that, but it's really that the movie itself doesn't tread any new territory. It doesn't try and get you more into Peter Parker's mind. It doesn't try and break any new ground. It's just the origin of Spider-Man, and then Spider-Man has to beat an amazing foe.
No. It also had the Stacy family story in it, which, being an old school comic guy, I'm actually just familiar enough to realize that they hit a lot of it.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to use that as a jumping point to talk about the actors themselves, because pretty much the entire time that I saw Dennis Leary playing Captain George Stacy, a song of his kept on rolling through my head, up until, like, the last half hour of the movie. Because I'm an asshole. Dennis Leary does a great job of playing a butthead. It's what he's really good at, and considering the direction that they went with Captain Stacy, he was an excellent choice to play this character. I was happy to see his character evolve beyond that, but when you need somebody to play an a-hole at the beginning of the movie, Dennis Leary is a great choice!
I suspect, although I don't know personally, I suspect it's because that's how Dennis Leary really is.
Are you saying that Dennis Leary isn't an actor?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Dennis Leary has one of the best lines in the Demolition Man movie. It's as Sylvester Stallone's taking a bite of a burger. He's like, you see any cows around here?
Okay, Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker. Thoughts?
I liked him.
Considering the trailers made me hate him, and I didn't in the movie, I would say that's a good thing.
It's a good thing for his acting. It's a bad thing for the people who cut together the trailers.
Actually, I found I actually liked this Peter Parker more than Tobey Maguire.
Although part of that's acting, I suspect that part of that also is storytelling, because this Peter Parker really was the nerdy teenager. I know that Tobey Maguire played the nerdy teenager, but Andrew Garfield embodied it.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker suffered from the classic Hollywood nerd ideal. You throw a pair of glasses on him, and obviously he has to be a nerd. Andrew Garfield threw on the glasses about 45 minutes into the movie, but you still knew that he was a nerd. He didn't need the glasses to convey the fact that he was smart.
And out of sync. And he's less Hollywood handsome than Maguire, I would say.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, he doesn't have the cardboard cutout looks. Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy.
Her blonde hair looked more natural than Kristen Dunst's red hair.
Well, some would say that's because she's a natural blonde, but I still prefer her as a redhead.
Well, yeah, that's because of you and redheads, but I have no idea what natural hair color Stone has, but
I'd like to find out.
Well, yeah.
I've seen Emma Stone in several movies, and there hasn't been a single movie that I've seen her in that I haven't liked her in. And fortunately, this is not the exception. I thought she did a really good job with the role. She didn't find herself cast in the damsel in distress role, per se. The one time where she potentially could have been, she actually fought her way back out, so...
And they gave her Gwen Stacy's boots. Gwen Stacy, the character, was popular in the late 60s. So she wore boots because that's what women were wearing then. And I noticed that they gave this Gwen Stacy, she was habitually wearing boots. And I'm like, that's cool. It's just a little style thing that it's like, I remember that on Gwen Stacy, so I was glad to see it.
No, Emma Stone was great. I would say the only thing about either Andrew Garfield or Emma Stone that would throw anybody for a loop is they really don't look 16.
No. Emma Stone is closer to being 16 than Andrew Garfield is, but no, neither one of them really looked 16. They looked far more like they were in their early 20s.
Yes. They did a great job of playing the part of being 16, but they didn't look 16.
Oh, yeah. In that regard, the interaction between the two of them in the high school hallway where...
Awkward teenagerness?
Yeah.
That was great.
That was excellently done, and I'm sitting there the whole time going, oh yeah, I remember those days. Rhys Ifans as Dr. Kurt Connors. I spent half of the movie trying to figure out where I'd seen this guy from before. Finally came home, hopped online, realized that he was the soccer player from The Replacements. And I went, oh, wow, that's a big change of roles. To go from a sports comedy to a action superhero movie really felt like a big leap.
So, given the nature of playing soccer, did he only have one arm in The Replacements?
No.
Okay. Didn't realize he was that dedicated to his craft.
And as we are talking about this, that is the one thing that I will say about why I'm glad that this movie got made now as opposed to waiting 10 or 15 years to do a reboot. Is that 10 or 15 years from now, they wouldn't have gotten this cast together. And I really do think that this was a good cast. Rhys played a really good bad guy. Dennis was good. Emma was good. Andrew was good. Martin Sheen as Ben Parker. It was like the role was made for him.
Well, I think he's got experience giving out parental advice that's largely ignored.
Yeah.
However, if we'd waited 10 or 15 years, we could have gotten Charlie Sheen to play Ben.
You're assuming he's going to live that long.
Considering all the alcohol in him, I'm sure he'll be preserved that long.
You just throw his body out in front of a gunshot.
Also, considering his acting ability, I mean, he might as well just weaken the Bernie's it.
It was interesting seeing Sally Field playing May Parker. When I think of May Parker, I think Sally Field is actually too young to play the part.
I thought I was going to hate Sally Field's May Parker. As much as I like her and respect her as an actress, she doesn't embody the little old lady.
No, she doesn't. She seems to have far too much spirit to play Meg Parker.
And as Aunt May, she really only has a fairly minor role in it. She's really not in that much of it. But what she was in, I did like. I was like, okay, it's not the direction that I would have taken, but I can see it in retrospect now that I see her performance on screen.
Well, I think part of that is the fact that she actually played a May Parker that was likable. It's one of those weird things with the character of May Parker. There are times that I don't really like her. When they're portraying her as the wispy, naggy, Peter, why aren't you home yet? Type of character. I just don't like her. This May Parker I like.
I was actually reminded of her performance as Forrest Gump's mother.
Yeah, I could see that. The nurturer, the provider.
But without the horror aspect. I'm sorry, it's in the Forrest Gump movie. It's there.
Yeah.
That's Emma Stone.
No, that's just a rumor she's put around school. Somebody actually need to see that movie.
I have it on demand, and I keep thinking about watching it, and I just never have.
It's a funny movie. It's a good movie.
I've seen parts of it.
I enjoyed it. There is a line in the movie where Ben is talking to Peter and May about Peter's activities not really knowing what's going on. But he basically says, yeah, if he only knew what we were up to when we were kids. And I couldn't help but flash back to Gidget.
Well, you could have flashed back to the Flying Nun.
This is true.
I still want to be a fly on the wall in that meeting, even though it happened, you know, years ago. I mean, who sat there and said, okay, yeah, I got this idea for a new TV show. Yeah, we're going to take Gidget, and we're going to make her a nun. Yeah, but she'll fly. Well, glide, really. Yeah, you see, the wind will come up and catch the wimple on her. Yeah, the wimple. That's the headdress thing on a habit. I mean, who could sit there and pitch that?
I think the better question is, what were they on when they pitched
that? Well, it's the 60s. They wake up, like, one in the morning, like, really?
Now, as we said, this is Mark Webb's version, whereas before we had Sam Raimi's version. Mark Webb's directorial history entails 500 Days of Summer, which starred Zooey Deschanel and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Before that, he did a ton of music videos.
How much does a music video weigh?
90 pounds.
Okay.
And to be honest, I did kind of feel like some of that music video experience kind of leaked into the movie. The quick shots, the lighting, the color schemes did kind of have a bit of a music video feel to it. That being said, I think that's not a bad thing because people much younger than ourselves are used to that flashy style of directing, and it works well for it. And it was still better than the non-steadicam type of directing.
Sound footage directing. I hate you.
And the bright colors and stuff. Spider-Man's a comic book.
This is true.
But as for Mark Webb's choices, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a big name right now, or a rising star, as it were. But Zooey Deschanel couldn't act her way out of a bag. And if you disagree with me, I will sell you a bridge. PayPal all your money to jim@twerponline.net. That's jim@twerponline.net. PayPal all of your money right now.
I don't think people hire Zooey Deschanel for her acting ability.
They hire her for her happy endings?
Something like that.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Now we know what you are, now we're just negotiating price.
But no, I thought he did a good job with it. His style of storytelling is much different than Sam Raimi's. Sam Raimi occasionally went for the gag. You know, loved doing inside winks to the audience, like putting Bruce Campbell in his film.
Putting his own car in the film.
Putting his brother in the film.
And you're right, with gags, I mean, we have not seen Mark Webb's J. Jonah Jameson, but Sam Raimi's was kind of a buffoon.
Yes.
So was Stan Lee's.
Mark Webb's Spider-Man didn't have a lot of humor in it. There were humorous parts. I think there were humorous parts in it that only we found humorous, but it was fewer and farther apart.
Stan Lee's cameo got a lot of laughs.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's why Stan Lee cameos are in there.
Actually, one of the things I liked is the fact that they didn't include the whole Daily Bugle stuff yet. J. Jonah Jameson, Daily Bugle stuff. It didn't actually dawn on me until the movie was over. It's like, wait, they didn't include any of that. And then it dawned on me, I didn't miss it.
That's because a lot of the Spider-Man is Evil stuff was actually coming from the police. So that aspect of the storytelling was there without having to include the Daily Bugle in it. And it was actually interesting because with this as the lead-up, I'm actually able to sit there and go, okay, now I kind of understand where J. Jonah Jameson is coming from. It's not completely out of left field. It's based on information that he had received. Faulty information that he had received, but actual information.
Well, everyone knows the reason Jameson hates Spider-Man is because Spider-Man's a mutant.
He may not be categorized as a mutant in the Marvel Universe, but he certainly is.
Well, no, it isn't that. It's the fact that apparently the general public in the Marvel Universe are issued scorecards to know which costume heroes are and aren't mutants. I mean, seriously, if mutant hysteria is the big thing that they put in the X-Men comics, why doesn't Jameson ever say, Spider-Man must be a mutant, in his papers?
To get people ticked off at him.
That's a really good question.
This is why I think the X-Men work better when they're off by themselves and not trying to interact with the Avengers or Spider-Man or Luke Cage or Squadron Supreme, Silver Surfer.
Well, you see, the problem with separating them is we've already figured out that every character in the Marvel Universe is actually a mutant. Because generally, when a radioactive spider bites you, you die. Or, when you're in a gamma bomb explosion, you die! when you're frozen for 70 years in a block of ice? You die!
When you're an archer doing carny tricks, you don't so much die, but you have a really, really sad, pathetic life.
When you're given a super soldier serum that has killed everybody else, you die!
Unless, of course, you're a mutant.
Yeah. We've played this game off-screen before. The idea that you can go through and pretty much say everybody who is a superhero either is a mutant or could be accused of being a mutant.
Well, yeah, that's the whole... Why don't people look at Thor and just go, okay, he thinks he's a god and he's a grossly powerful mutant. What the hell's up with this? He looks like a surfer, talks like Shakespeare, and he says he's Norwegian. What?
You are the smartest man on the planet. So smart that when you get shot in the heart...
When you get shot in the heart, you die. When you're a Russian spy who defects to the United States, you die!
So, after seeing all of this, overall thoughts on the movie, rating, what do you think?
I liked it. I didn't love it. I would give it 2.5 pens in the pocket protector.
Okay. So, out of the four, what did you give the original Spider-Man movie?
I don't remember what I gave it at the time. I would say, with the benefit of hindsight, I would give it 3 pens in the pocket protector.
Okay, so you liked Sam Raimi's a little bit more than this one.
Yes.
Ken?
Never been good with the whole pocket protector thing. You both know this. Anyone listening knows this. I did enjoy it, and if I have to do the pocket protector thing, I guess I'll say 3. I did actually prefer to the Sam Raimi version, slightly. Basically, I like Emma Stone better than I like Kirsten Dunst. And I like Reese Ifans, Kirk Connors more than I like Blaine Defoe as the Green Goblin. Mostly with the Power Rangers suit thing, but...
Go, go, Green Goblin!
Well, no, with the fact that he was scarier without the mask.
I would say I liked them both equally. There were little things that I didn't like about Sam Raimi's that I thought Webbs did better. There were things about Webbs that I thought Sam Raimi did better. I think I'm going to go with a 3 out of 4 pens for both of them.
I have to say, as my last word anyways, I did like how far the CGI has come in the last 10 years. Which is not a complaint against the Sam Raimi, but you could see that this is the next level of CGI in this one.
Yeah. Sam Raimi's CGI Spider-Man was good. But yeah, they have gotten better about the details. And the more details you fill in with CGI, and the less you leave for the brain to fill in, the easier it is to accept it as reality.
It's a summer blockbuster. How much could use of the brain anyways?
Yeah, but this one was better at avoiding the so-called Uncanny Valley. When you have robots or computer animation, there is a point where you accept it as human, you accept it as human, you accept it as human. There's a point when you get so close to human that it gets too close and starts just getting creepy shortly before you get to the completely believable as human kind of thing. I think it's one of the reasons why the Pixar films don't make their characters more human.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is still right there towards the bottom of CGI.
Yeah, it's one of the worst I've seen in modern times. You go back and you watch, say, Jurassic Park, which is one of the first really heavily CGI films that there was. If you look at it now, the CGI is pathetic. I mean, first generation CGI. But you have to go back and remember, this was the first time you saw it. I'm like, wow, those look like dinosaurs!
At least as much as I remember.
Yeah, they did a good job of making people go, wow, that's what my imagination says that dinosaurs look like.
They got the skin all wrong. When you've actually seen it up close, you can tell the difference. Sorry.
I told you, we're not supposed to discuss the time travel technology.
Okay, then we won't mention the technology.
Speaking of time travel, let's look towards the future. As Doug mentioned earlier, they started writing the sequel to this about 6 months ago. I have a feeling that whether this had been a success or not, Sony still would have released Amazing Spider-Man 2. It's that whole, we want to keep the license thing. Fortunately, this turned out to be a good film. They're talking about this being at least the first in a trilogy, with the possibility of there being even more of them.
Or if not, they'll do 3 and then recast everybody and start over again.
Yeah. Of course, there's always the weekly releases of Spider-Man in the comic books. go to your comic book store, you can probably pick up 3 comics that came out this week that have Spider-Man in them.
Well, you know, the whole thing with movies and doing trilogies and stuff is the Hollywood doesn't really want to think about what they're making anymore. And with these known franchises, it's easier to make another movie or reboot another movie. They're currently filming the 4th Mad Max movie. They're recasting it. And they're just filming it, and they're already talking about doing a 5th and 6th movie.
Yeah, they say that the lack of creativity in Hollywood is at an all-time high. It's because it's cheaper. It's easier. Is it right? No. But it's a whole lot easier to sit there and go, okay, we don't mind shelling out $50 million for a movie that's a sequel to a movie that made $200 million. We know we're going to get our money back.
I mean, I could mention the fact that we saw a trailer for Total Recall while we were sitting there.
Which we'll probably do a tour cast on.
Oh, yeah.
Other places that you can catch Spider-Man? He is on TV. They've got Ultimate Spider-Man, and from what I understand, towards the end of the season, he's actually joining the Avengers. So, you can still get your abundance of Spider-Man.
Well, thank you for listening. As always, we appreciate you tuning in to TorpCast. For your comments, please write jim@torponline.net. You can also be found on Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
And Doug's offer about the bridge is not valid in Tennessee. Sorry, Tennessee.
Also not valid on Earth 616.
TorpCast has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2012.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins the web any size. Can't you see? Just likewise. Look out! Here comes the Spider-Man.